to the Swim and Tell Spotlight. I'm Jamie Bailey, and today we have one of the absolute best coaches in all of swimming, Coach Bill Dorencott, Director of Swimming and Diving at The Ohio State University. Coach Dorencott is a five-time Big Ten Coach of the Year, racking up 7 Big Ten team titles, 9 top 20 NCAA team finishes, 82 individual Big Ten conference champions, over 400 NCAA qualifiers, and coached multiple Olympians, including a gold medalist, as well as a world record holder. Coach, it's awesome to have you here. Thank you for coming on.
Jamie, I appreciate the opportunity to share and look forward to our conversation.
All right, so you're at Ohio State, one of the top programs in the country. You've got to have hundreds, maybe thousands of kids just dreaming of swimming for you. You know, obviously, not everybody's going to make the cut. So just outside of raw times, what's your process for figuring out who's a good fit for your team?
Well, there's so much more to it than just times. And I think, you know, I've been coaching collegiately for 34 years, and I've never gone to a program that was a high achiever when we got there. So we always took over dogs, but it's kind of like buying the worst house on the best street in the neighborhood, right? And so the house had good bones. So whether it's Ohio State, or I was at Penn State, or in fact Ashland before that, and so, you know, we built a strong foundation. We took our time. We were purposeful, but because we took over programs that didn't have a high degree of success, we weren't getting the pick of the litter in terms of recruits. So we really had to have a system that worked for us. And so there's two things that I think we've done really well historically, and that is, one, found kids who are a good fit for our program and institution, and two, developed the heck out of them. And so I think that times and rankings can be a little bit misleading because they don't tell the whole tale. I'll use as an example, one of our seniors this year, Daniel Baltus. Daniel was a three-sport athlete coming out of high school, never swam a long course meter meet in his life, was from Minnesota, great student, great family, obviously very athletic. And he came recommended from a close friend of mine, said, you know, you really should give this kid a chance. You know, and here we are 4 years later. And, you know, Daniel semi'd at Olympic trials in the 50 free. He's an anchor on our relays. And so, you know, that just speaks to, it isn't just times. It's athleticism. It's how far into your swimming career are you? It's technique, it's recommendations, it's human qualities, it's everything.
So, you know, how important is it for you to actually see a recruit either swim in person or on video before you decide this is somebody I want on my team?
Really have to see it. And I'll use Maggie McNeil as an example. So Maggie was, she's from Canada. And in fact, just up across the lake from Cleveland, Ohio. And a small club team. And she was a good swimmer out of high school, you know, so before she broke onto the world stage. And my assistant and I drove up there, and we knew we liked her a lot just as a person. And within 5 minutes of watching her practice, we offered her a full ride. And just that movement underwater, you couldn't coach it. And sure enough, she proved us wrong. Unfortunately, it wasn't at Ohio State, but that's a great example, right?
Yeah. So I was checking out your roster. And it looks like your women's team has a lot of sprinters, you know, more majority sprinters than anything else. But, you know, especially this year, your men's team is leaning more toward distance. Do you plan that out intentionally, or does it kind of just happen based on the recruits you get, the recruits you see? And do you actually search out for versatility, or are you more about finding those specialists?
Well, when we combined the program 8 years ago, so I've been at Ohio State for 17 years. I've been with the women for 17, the men for 8. When we combined the program 8 years ago, on the men's side, we're very purposeful that we're going to build a championship caliber program around sprinting, relays, and diving. And that's exactly what we did. We had some staff turnover, and as a function, some of our sprinters were graduating, and we were left with a hole. And at that time, really the distance kids were the ones we were able to get. So we're a little top heavy on the men's side in distance right now. And so we have to fix that so that our relays get stronger at both the conference at the national level. On the women's side, historically, and when I say historically, really over the past 8 years, our strength has really come in the relays and in the sprint events. And so we've attracted a lot of kids that are, want to be a part of that.
All right, so let's talk about the Grant Howe settlement and all these changes that are happening across college sports. Power four teams really appear to be, affected the most by these changes. So what adjustments are you seeing coming in terms of, roster size, available scholarships, resources, or other areas of your particular program?
Well, I think it's going to vary one conference to conference and two institution to institution. So the settlement said that in the sports of swimming and diving that we can have a roster cap of 30 athletes. Historically at Ohio State, we've carried 40 athletes. We've carried 34 swimmers and six divers. And I was able to negotiate that in part because we believe in developing athletes. So we'll have some kids that maybe as sophomores or freshmen can't help us. But by the time they become a junior, they can crack our scoring roster or they can make a relay. And it was a pretty hard sell just to get to 34 and six because the national average was around 28. And so my boss had said, look, we want you to carry 28 athletes. That's what the average is nationally. And I said, well, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I'm average, you're going to fire me. And he said, no, that's probably right. And I said, well, if you look at the top five teams in the country, we benchmarked with Florida and Texas and Indiana, and they carried big rosters, especially on the men's side. And so we did the same. So this settlement was coming to fruition over the summer, and we were hearing all kinds of rumors. We were hearing 22 on the guy's side, and we're hearing 30. And sure enough, it sounds like they agreed that 30 was the right number. So at Ohio State, we've made the decision we're going to carry 25 swimmers and five divers. Five divers is probably more than a lot of teams will carry, but historically, diving at Ohio State has been a real strength, and we want it to continue to be a strength. We've heard, and I certainly can't speak for other leagues, that the SEC on the men's side is going to be 22. And you can kind of project out and look and say, you could guess, all right, they're probably going to carry this many swimmers and this many divers. And then you can look at their roster and you can say, all right, they have this many seniors graduating, they've got these many kids committed. They're going to be 12 over their cap. And so those kids have to go somewhere. But every school in the country is doing that same math. And so what we're seeing is that the roster spot in some cases is more valuable than the scholarship. Because at the end of the day, a lot of kids just want the opportunity. And with the way swimming's been in the past, where the most a college could give was 9.9 scholarships on the guy side, 14 on the women's side. Most kids weren't getting a full ride anyway. They were paying at least part of the freight to go to a respective university. And so those roster spots have become gold. I can only share what we're doing and what I'm hearing. And I won't go too much to the rumor part of it. We're going to get a little bit more than 9.9. We're going to get a little bit more than 14. I'm not going to tell you how much because I still want to have a competitive advantage. We won't be close to 30 scholarships on either side, men's or the women's. We'll have a little bit more on the women's side than on the men's, and that speaks to Title IX or gender equity. And so that only makes sense. And so we'll continue to exist where we give out partial scholarships. And sometimes we're able to add merit aid onto it, or we're able to add, maybe a military discount or some other form where we can package money to make it more affordable for a kid to look at the school. What we're hearing, even within the Big Ten, is some schools will be below what they were before. So they'll be below 9.9 or below 14. Some will stay the same. And then I would assume there'll be a handful that'll move up a little bit. What my AD has shared with us is to look at a school's annual revenue. And that really tells the tale. Now, at Ohio State, we're blessed. We have an annual revenue of $290 million. However, we have 36 sports. You need 18 sports to is the minimum you need to be a Division I school. And so when you have other schools that have big annual revenues but have smaller number of programs, they're able to have a little bit more in the way of scholarships. And so one of the things that transpired, and I apologize for monopolizing our conversation here, one of the things that transpired was with 36 sports, there's not an appetite on behalf of athletic directors or presidents to cut sports. What you saw happen during COVID was those presidents and ADs that cut sports, a lot of them lost their jobs because there was such a public outcry on those institutional, campuses to say no. So our people were really opposed to that. And thank goodness they've come up with a plan to keep all 36 sports. The other thing I think you're going to see is, and it'll probably take 3 or 4 years to play out, is one, I'm not sure every athletic department has a plan. Two, I'm not sure that every department has made that plan public. I'm not sure that coaches always know the plan. And I'm not sure that coaches will actually share it for fear of losing out on recruits, competitive equity, whatever you want to call it. So we're pretty well positioned within the Big Ten. I don't know how we'll stack up nationally in terms of, our scholarship allotments, but I feel pretty good, moving forward, at least from an Ohio State perspective, that we'll continue to be able to put a good team in the pool.
You know, if the SEC does indeed go to a roster limit of 22, th there is no room for error in that roster when you get into NCAA's, even conference. Do you think the Big Ten is going to have a significant advantage having a roster limit of 30 versus 22?
Well, I don't know because there's a chance some of those schools in the SEC will go to 22 full scholarships. And so that's absolutely an advantage. But the ability to develop eight extra athletes, that for sure helps. It's not just going to be opportunities person for person, it's also going to be events. So if you look at NC2A track and field, most programs in track and field have to choose, are we going to be a sprint program? Are we going to be a hurdle program? Are we going to be a field program? And I think that you're going to see not just less opportunities for men. I think you're going to see less opportunities for distance swimmers and 200 flyers and 400 IMers, because most programs are probably going to stack their roster with sprinters to field great relays.
Oh, that's really interesting. So, what do you think happens to some of the smaller, less funded programs that opt into the settlement, when all of this shakes out?
Well, everybody thinks that there's going to be a trickle-down effect. Now, it's a little bit like musical chairs. There aren't going to be enough chairs when the music stops. But the question becomes, can you be creative in terms of what you offer? And so I'll give you an example. My sense is that some programs, and certainly we're considering this, are looking at something that would be the equivalent of a JV program. And so what that would be, it'd be a club on your college campus, and it'd be an elite club. It'd be a club for some of the top athletes in the country. And so there'd be two things there. One is, when you get to a level that you're competitive at a Big Ten and or an NC2A level, that's the first piece. Or the second is, maybe you're a one event guy. And so for us, we have three goals annually. The first is to compete for a Big Ten title. The second is to be consistently in the top 10 in the country. And the third is to put kids on their respective countries' national and international teams. And so if we do that year over year, my boss is going to be pretty happy. Our kids are going to be happy. And we're going to have a really good product in the pool. A lot of kids coming out of high school don't have a second event or a third event. To compete for a conference title or to compete at the national level, you need to develop those second and those third events. And so sometimes that just takes time. And so one of the things that we're proposing is putting a program together for those kids to be able to develop.
Yeah. You mentioned the backlash that happened during COVID when ADs cut programs. And we saw a lot of those programs come back. It didn't they didn't stay cut for very long. Do you think, given that history and these changes, do you think Olympic sports in college are in danger across the board?
I don't want to go that far yet. I think we're heading that way, and I think if we don't come up with a better model, we will be in trouble. And I've seen different data, but anywhere between 65 to 80% of the Summer Olympics, Summer Olympians were developed on college campuses. So we are a big part of that model, and we want to continue to be a big part of the model into the future. And if we don't come up with a better mousetrap, for lack of a better word, we're going to become a little bit irrelevant. And so I think we need to be purposeful. I think we need to be proactive. And I think we need to be the best stewards of our own sport.
Even outside of swimming, we talk about football and other college sports. I've heard a lot of coaches talk about how they're going to leverage the transfer portal a lot more moving forward. Obviously, in sports like football, there is a win right now or else kind of atmosphere. Do you plan on leveraging the transfer portal more going forward, or do you prefer to get your recruits out of high school so you can develop them kind of from the start of their collegiate career?
Well, it's interesting. This is a good question, and one of the reasons I'm a subscriber to your product is because, anecdotally, I always felt a certain way, but I actually wanted to see if it was true. And so our program, if you're to look at it, it takes anywhere between 6 and 18 months to kind of adapt to what we do and how we do it. And so, in my opinion, it's always better if you can get somebody who has 4 years of runway to work with. At a minimum, it's got to be 2 years. So I'm not a one and done type of guy. And then just a historical perspective, the transfer, you've been able to transfer for a long, long time. Transfers, as a rule, are a 50-50 proposition. Half the time they work out and half the time they don't. And so I think, as people go that route, boy, you better do your due diligence on just, is it a good fit, right? Because there's a reason that people transfer, and sometimes those are valid reasons, and sometimes not so much. I'm always amazed that we've been pretty fortunate here. We haven't had a lot of kids transfer, but when we have, the programs they've gone to haven't called and asked. And I'm going to be kind, but I'm also going to be honest. And so, I think again back to that idea of due diligence.
Yeah, that's obviously one of our main goals at Swimintel is if we're going to help an athlete find their college fit, we don't want to see them transfer. I mean, I think we will have failed if we see them transfer. I don't like seeing red shirts either. I really think it's swimming in particular is a difficult sport to have to persevere through, especially if you have to put all the yards in and you don't even get to race, right? So I hate seeing the transfers. I hate seeing the red shirts. I love seeing when athletes go to a college and thrive. And you've had some really good success with that over your career.
I'm proud of it, and my hope is one, we've done our due diligence, but I think the flip side of that is we've been brutally honest in the recruiting process. Like we don't pull any punches. It's not a sales, it really is matchmaking. So we're going out and we're being genuine. The gap is always the gap between theory and testimony. So it's hard. A kid comes to Ohio State, they go to a football game, they get some free meals. Man, this is the greatest. You say, no, this is really hard. What we do is really hard. And then they get to their sophomore year, like, man, what did I sign on for? Right. And I go, that's a bad thing because that means I did a poor job of explaining what it was really, really going to be like. But no, my two favorite days of the year are last home dual meet when we honor our seniors, and then our team banquet. And we graduate big class. We graduate 20 kids between the men, the women, swimming and diving. That means you're doing something right.
Okay, so if you grade out your recruiting class the last few years and just strictly by time, just high school times, you actually come in fifth in the Big Ten for both your men's and your women's classes. Yet your women's team has won the Big Ten 4 out of the last 5 years, and your men's team has been second 4 out of the last 5 years. You're doing this with development. You've had huge time drops for both your men's and your women's teams. Some of the best progressions of any team across all of college swimming, any division. Halfway through this season, your men are sitting at an average drop of over 4% from high school, which puts you right there at the top of swimming right now, of all the college swimming right now. How do you get elite development out of swimmers that are already elite when they come into Ohio State as freshmen?
All right, Jamie. So I wonder if the skill of identifying kids who we know are going to be good, I wonder if I'd gone to Wall Street, do you think I could have had that kind of success? In all seriousness, though, I kind of wear it like a badge of honor. I think too many people get wrapped up in 5-star recruits and swam, best of the rest and everything else, and it just means nothing to me. And when kids come on a visit, my assistants always get nervous because I meet with every recruit, And a meeting will finish up, and they'll say, "Well, how'd it go?" And I'll say, "Well, I offered her a full ride." And they'll be like, "You what?" And I'm like, "Trust me, dude, she's gonna be good." And sure enough, a couple years later, like, "All right, I get it." But there isn't necessarily a rhyme or a reason. Some of it's intuition, but some of it's just experience and reps. No, I love that. I love that. And quite frankly, my hope is this. I try to kind of fly under the radar with some of our recruiting or letting other people know who we're interested in, because I think the word's getting out a little bit that we have a pretty good eye for what we do, and we're able to find some kids in unusual places.
Well, if Swim and Tell is successful, the word will get out because you're always at the top. So it's really
Appreciate that.
awesome to see that. So, do you approach training men different than women? I know your background. I think you were the women's coach at Penn State for a while before you became Ohio State coach. Is it a different training methodology between the two?
All right, so this is pre-Swim Intel. I was really good. You get recruits come in, and I could get them fast as freshmen. I mean, I could get kids fast right out of the gate. And then they didn't improve a lot over 4 years. And I used to think it was them. It wasn't them. It was me. It was our program. And so I made a pivot about halfway through my coaching career, and really kind of made a deal with myself that I wanted kids going lifetime best as seniors, men and women. Your data, as I looked, I subscribed last year, and as I looked through the data, our women were best in the conference as freshmen, also best in the conference as seniors. Our men were best in the conference as seniors, but they were not very good as freshmen. And so we've made a little bit of a purposeful pivot this year in some of the training that we're offering to the men, because they weren't adapting at the rate we needed them to. I still feel the same. I want our kids going their best stuff as seniors. However, I don't want to lag my peers. And probably, it had to be a little bit demoralizing for the guys, just relative, one, comparing themselves to girls, which is a mistake, but also comparing themselves to their peers, who were getting faster earlier on in their career. So I'm not sure if I answered your question or not.
No, that makes sense. So let's say you weren't coaching at Ohio State. Let's say you were at a mid-major or you're at a D2 or D3. Would your training be any different than it is at Ohio State?
Well, when I didn't start swimming till my senior year of high school, and I went to college. I swam in college, and my first job was a little Division II school about an hour north of here, Ashland University. And I'm an Ohio guy, born and raised, and I didn't have much background in the sport, but at that time I read a book, and it was a lot about Mark Schubert and how he had been winning national titles. And he did it with underappreciated athletes, so 200 fly, 400 IM mile. So I thought, man, we're going to do that as well. So we just recruited a lot of kids that weren't getting as much love at a high level, and we ended up, having a lot of success in a pretty short period of time. And then, I went to Penn State as a men's assistant, and we really, that team went from ninth to sixth to third to first in the Big Ten over a 4 year period. And we really did it with sprints, relays, and diving. Although we had some good kids in the other events, and so it's run the gamut. I what I'd probably do is reverse engineer it. I'd look at the league, and I'll use a great example. The guy at Akron's done a great job, right?
Yes.
Historically, I've been in the Midwest forever, and the MAC's always been a good conference, and it's had some phenomenal, some of the best coaches in history, Peter Lynn, and you could go through it. So you just you see what the league allows, you see where the weaknesses are, and then you attack those weaknesses.
Yeah, the MAC is really strong.
Yes.
Akron, Ball State, there's some great swimming, great coaching, great recruiting in the MAC. It is a high-end mid-major,
No
absolutely.
question. Yeah, no question.
Okay, so when you're looking, let's go back to recruiting. So when you're looking at recruits, do you ever think about their current environment, like their club coaches or how they're being trained? Is that something that helps you figure out if they're going to thrive with you, or do you just focus on the swimmer?
Oh no, the club absolutely plays a role. So just who's coaching the club, historical development, how they train, what's left in the tank. And so, there's some clubs that that a kid has really been trained at a high level, in some cases higher than a collegiate level. And then once you figure that out, I'll use a distance swimmer as an example. A distance swimmer who doesn't like distance, but is being recruited as a distance swimmer, but thinks they're going to get to college and it's going to be fun, different, or they're going to become a sprinter. That's like a recipe for disaster. Meaning, now, and that's where it just kind of goes back to that process. You just really have to be honest. One of the most interesting metrics of your database is the corollary between the club they come from and the program they're looking at. And I haven't done a deep enough dive, but just initially looking at it, I think it's probably pretty close to correct, right? If you look at like the top five, the bottom five, and there are some, look, and I'm not certainly not going to name names, but there's clubs where kids go to college and get faster, and then there's some that they don't.
Yeah, it's burnout. We see kids coming out of these clubs and they've been swimming 10,000 yards a day since they were 13 years old. They're done. They're done when they get there. We see injuries, where their just shoulders are shredded by the time they get to college and they don't want to do it anymore. So, when you're looking at these clubs, do you ever look for or have a preference for clubs that are high yardage environments, low yardage environments, or a particular training style that you feel like really kind of molds well, blends well with what you do?
Well, so I'll name three guys that, and this goes back to our conversation about the house case that I don't know today I'd be able to give him a spot on our team. One is Charlie Clark, right? Charlie's been on the U.S. national team now for 4 years. I don't think he was state champ coming out of high school. 4:26, 500 free was his top event. But what I loved about Charlie's, every time I looked at the results, he swam every single event at a meet. He never scratched finals. So, in basketball, they talk about gym rats. Charlie was a swim rat. He just loved the sport. Use Hunter Armstrong. Hunter was a junior national qualifier out of high school. I think I offered him 10%. His brother went to West Virginia. He followed his brother. And, after freshman year, he called us up, wanted to transfer, and certainly came up here, and the rest is kind of history. And then Daniel Baltus, who we talked about before, right, who's just a late bloomer. I see it a lot. The kid who was second or third in the state, a lot of times will pass the kid who was first because they're still hungry.
Okay, so you talked about swimming fast all the time. You talked about, swimming, enjoying those meets. What's your take on dual meets? Some coaches that they're all about hyping them up, making them more exciting for fans. Others just kind of see them as a distraction from the end of season grind. Are dual meets, are they a big part of your strategy, or are you more like, yeah, let's just get through them. I got to get to the end.
I may have to rethink our philosophy on dual meets, and I can just share a historical perspective. So, always coaching in the Midwest or a little bit east in Pennsylvania, we've been blessed that there's so many programs within a bus ride away. And so you could save some money by just, taking a bus out and then coming back. And when I was at Penn State, we didn't have a great facility. So we had to travel a lot. But again, we're fortunate that within a 3-4 hour drive, there were a ton of teams we could race. What I believe is one, there's not a lot of learning that goes on in a straight up dual meet. So you drive somewhere, you swim 2 hours, you get back in the bus, you come back, and then the kids forget about it till 2 weeks later when they swim their next dual meet. So I like a multi-session or multi-day meet, because there's learning and there's coaching and there's teaching and there's adjustments that can happen. Second, is it cost effective? So we're going to go out to Notre Dame the third weekend of January, and I love that meet. It's a 2-day, 3-session meet. We get a ton of bang for our buck, and it's really, really hard. Meaning, yes, from a lot of events in a short period of time. It's kind of a finisher. It matches up with our training well to prep us for the Big Ten meet that's going to be 2, 3, 4 weeks after that. That being said, if I take two teams out there, I stay 2 nights, I've got to feed them, hotel, everything, it's going to cost my program $50,000. $50,000 is a ton of money. And
Wow.
so when you talk about programs, getting cut, I think we have to be great stewards of our resources. And so where do we get the most bang for our buck? If it's competition, whatever it might be. Now at Ohio State, we're blessed. People love to come to this facility because it's such a great facility. So we don't have to travel as much. We're able to save a little bit of money there. But I probably, in terms of promotion, or self-promotion, we probably have to spice it up a little bit in terms of dual meets. So I'll pitch you right now. I think we should swim Teton, and Teton is that team up north. We should swim Teton the Friday after Thanksgiving annually. The next day is the football game. We could get it on the Big Ten network, make it a made-for-TV deal, suit both teams up. It would be electric. It'd be great for both of our programs.
That would be awesome. I would love that. That would be awesome. Okay. So you said suit up. So this is a big debate in swimming. Do you like having your team suit up and go absolutely all out in dual meets, maybe a drop taper, or do you save the big performances for championships? In other words, does racing fast in season help you in your strategy, in your development, or are you just burning matches when you do that?
Well, I am of the belief that you only have so many bullets in the gun, right? And actually, my good friend Ray Luz had said you can only go to the well so many times. And so I think you need to be judicious with just because you can do something doesn't mean that you should do something. I'm certainly not opposed to it, but it's not just physiological, it's also psychological. And so I want our kids peaking. I want our best performances to be in February and in March. And then there's a second piece to this, and the piece is, are you using the suits to augment performance, or are you using them as a crutch to kind of cover over things that you didn't do or haven't gotten done or haven't developed? And that can't be the case. You can put a suit on any time in practice. I personally think second half of the year, I want to put a suit on at least once every other week. So whether it's in a meet or whether it's in practice doesn't really matter. The last piece is this, is we're not going to do it. There's going to be no gamesmanship. So I'm never going to let a team get an advantage at my expense, and I'm not going to do it to the other team. So we're going to have a conversation with the coach and say, is this something that makes sense? It works well with your plan? If so, let's do it. And if it doesn't, then that's okay as well.
Yeah, I like the balance because the one thing that I've always hated about the sport were coaches that basically we're going to train through every meet. You're never going to swim fast, but we're going to taper you and you're going to swim great that one time that year. And oh, let's just hope you don't get sick. Let's just hope I don't screw your taper up, because if I do, then you're going to have to wait an entire next year to know where you really stand in your training. And that I hate. I think there's a balance between that and putting on a suit every meet.
Jamie, I used to be that coach, right? Like if anything, it was like medieval, right? Like anything, you just beat the heck out of kids all season long, and then you'd rest them and they'd swim faster and you thought you had a good taper. Like, no, you didn't. And so that's, when I look at year over year improvement, and then where do you stack up nationally against your peers? I think those are better benchmarks for maybe a successful plan, well-planned program and adaptation than did you just beat somebody up so bad that they couldn't get out of their own way?
Well, and I think it also probably, this is anecdotal. I think it can help with retention. I know being around swimmers, the excitement when they see that progression, they see that time on the board, and it feels like, okay, I put the last 8 weeks, I have killed myself, but look, I'm seeing the results. And I think, you can get a lot of burnout if you don't kind of give them those wins as they lead up to those championship meets. Retention isn't great in the sport. We lose one out of six swimmers as freshmen before they go to the sophomore year at the D1 level. And that's a pretty good chunk. And it's evenly distributed between, power fours, mid majors across the board. And so I think anything that helps with that retention could potentially, help the sport as well.
The sport and what it takes to be good at this sport is just it's so difficult, right? And so I have an unbelievable appreciation. I don't care if you're the fastest or the slowest kid on the team. Your willingness to commit to that process, and Eddie Reese used to say it so well, but just if you got better, it's a win, right? Like, and you've got better year over year over year, man, that's a big win. And so, no, I'm with you. I get really, and Having kids go faster is a motivator for everybody. We started the conversation talking about picking a Big Ten team. Now that's only a December pick. We're going to do it again in February, and then we'll do it for real we'll do it in January, then we'll do it for real in February. But some of the things that we look at is, who do you want on that team that's going to make everybody around them better? And it's not always the kid who wins the event. Sometimes it's the kid who moves from, 48th up to 16th. Sometimes it's the kid who never scored before and makes a B final as a sophomore or a junior. And so, no, there's the wins behind the wins.
When you get together with your coaching staff, are you guys writing down what you think is going to happen at Big Tens? And do you go back and kind of grade against your predictions?
We absolutely do. And I would divide my staff into optimists, realists, and pessimists. And I consider myself a realist, but I've got some true optimists on my staff. And we'll put 2 A's in a B or 2 B's in a C. And you kind of take it with a grain of salt depending on who's giving the information.
That's great. All right, last question. What do swimmers and coaches do for fun on campus besides winning Big Ten titles in swimming and football?
Our kids, we've got a, and I'm not just saying this, we have a really, really good group of kids, right? And so it could be something as silly as in the spring when the season's over, the athletes have a swimmer formal, right? And they all get dressed up and they rent someplace out and they all go down there, which I think is pretty creative. They have quite a bit of fun around Halloween, and hopefully it's wholesome, healthy fun. Our kids are here year round, right? We're blessed in that we can keep our kids here all year round. Summer is a ton of fun. We get a lot done, but they really get to explore Ohio and see all four seasons. And then, we have a pretty diverse team. We have kids from not just all over the country, but all over the world. And so it's a cool place to be a young person, right? It's pretty hip city, and good foodie town as well.
Yeah, I've been on campus. It's awesome. It's a great environment. It is a great college environment too. Just every sport is fun there. So
When recruits come out and their parents join them, their parents are a little bit envious. They're like, "College wasn't like this when I went to school."
my wife and I said this a lot when we were touring for my daughter. We said over and over again, can we redo college? 'Cause this looks so much more fun than what I did.
Oh, there's no question. Yep.
Coach, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate the thoughts, the insights. I'm really excited to see where your data ends up, at the end of the year. I'm excited to see, you had new additions to the Big Ten conference. So
Oh
conference
yeah.
championships are going to be wild across all the realignment conferences. It's going to be wild. I can't wait to see that. The swimming is insane in the Big Ten. So good luck. Can't wait to see the data. And again, thank you for coming on.
Well, Jamie, thank you for being a fan of the sport, and thank you for the service that you do for athletes and coaches and recruits with Swim Intel. All
All right. Thanks, Coach.
right, bye-bye.